Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's October. It's the 21st. It's Wednesday. Good morning, Jason. I just told you, I don't have my contacts in. It's like I got to look at the calendar. I have to second guess. Yeah, that is you over there. I guess I rely heavily on my readers, and that's even with contacts in. And so we're kind of going a little blind today, but welcome to the studios of Great News Radio, and we're glad you tuned in. And on Wednesday, my co-host from Wednesday and Friday, Pastor Jason Schiffo joins me. We talk about a variety of topics. And off air, we're talking about, and I want to continue on this theme about the importance of being silent when there's a situation in someone's life, or we want to offer advice or counsel, or we want to be like Job's friends, but they kind of failed. They did great, the first 7 days or so many days.
Yeah, they did good at the beginning.
But the importance of just listening and not offering an advice. And I had shared an example that I had written some advice, and right before I sent it off, I deleted it and thought, I'll just go with the initial line that I'm praying for the individual, not offer such and such and such and such. And I kind of was really glad I did that, and then I got a proper response and a thanks. But you have had some turmoil and some blessings in disguise.
Yeah. Well, I think let's get some context around, because I think context is always king, and I think we've probably all maybe heard or misapplied even the verse that you just shared concerning Job and his friends. Because it says here in Job chapter 2 and verse 13, and they sat with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. Now, I would say, well, that's, you know, Job's friends, a good practice when somebody is in a situation, a dire situation, that it's good sometimes just to come and not say anything. And I've even shared that with people many times. But what this is really here is this is that ancient Jewish practice of sitting Shiva. This is the 7 days during that mourning. That's why it says the mourning was very great. The suffering was very great for Job, because he has just lost his entire family. And so this is not because Job's friends didn't know how to, that they kind of hit the mark higher, because you really just mentioned that Job's friends failed because they began then to start this conversation after the seventh day. Well, it wasn't that they had failed. It was that they were just following a customary practice in terms of being silent during that mourning period out of respect for the dead, out of respect for those who are mourning. But I think that those questions were always churning in their minds. They were always trying to figure out when would be the moment, which I think is what we all humanly kind of deal with, right? I mean, the minute we see something happening, don't we always look for something to say?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think for me, it's kind of a place that we end up a lot in the Bible. It's a verse that I hesitate to use the term overuse, but it's used a lot, which is Psalm 46 and verse 10. Be still and know that I'm God. But we never go to the next part, which is I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. And I kind of laughed when I came in the studio this morning at our conversation now, only because you have the Singing Men set list for a concert you guys are going to do in the coming weeks, and you open with that song, Our God is a Mighty Fortress. And I think that sometimes we forget that, don't we? Because we think that something bad happens, and it appears as though the enemy has breached the line. It appears as though the enemy has gotten inside the wire, inside the walls of the fortress, and they haven't. God is a mighty fortress. Now, they were able to pierce your walls, because when you're not in that fortress with God, when you're not allowing God to be your strength and God to be your fortress, yeah, the walls are so easy. I mean, all it can take is a bad email, a phone call, the kids spill something, things don't go the way you want, the guy in front of you in traffic is just a doofus when it comes to driving.
Doofus. I haven't heard that term in a long time.
I'm Christian, so I have to come up with alternate words to use. But I mean, we, in our own strength, in our own ways, our walls are so easily pierced. And I think one of the ways that they really are, that it happens, is just our desire to say things. That's why that verse says, be still and know that I'm God. Be still, be quiet. You don't have to say anything. You just need to find your way towards my strength. Rest in my strength. You shared we had some turmoil, and I think it was Thursday night. Somebody broke into our car. We were in Indianapolis for my son's birthday, and we stopped to get some children's curriculum at a Christian bookstore there. And, you know, we were in there, and we're buying the stuff, and we're paying for it. And the kids come back in, and they're like, Dad, somebody broke the window out of the car, and they stole all your stuff. Now, they don't steal any of the kids' stuff. They stole all my stuff, though. You know, Jacob's like, they didn't steal my Iron Man. I'm like, great, but they stole mine. But, you know, I mean, in that moment, in your humanity, I mean, it helps. It really creates for us a window to see our own frailty, to see how frail as human beings we really are, emotionally and mentally and sometimes even physically, because when those things happen, it physically takes the life out of us. It frustrates us so. And no matter who you are, whether you're a pastor or you're a pope or you're a person who attends church on Sunday, you're affected in those situations the same. If you say you're not, then I would just challenge you that you're not being truthful, number one, with God, and number two, with yourself. Because we all come into situations where our humanity kind of, it's almost like a tidal wave, and our humanity just kind of comes over. And I'm transparent, Mark, so I don't have any problem sharing these things. But I was sharing with you before we came on the air that, you know, one of the hardest things for me was that we're standing in front of this Christian bookstore, and we're waiting for the police to come, and the car is sitting there, and there's glass all over the place. It's very apparent what has happened, and our kids are upset. They're sitting on the ground, and you can just see my wife's on the phone with the insurance company, and we're just trying to work it out, and folks are coming in, and they're just kind of, oh, man, I'm praying for you. Oh, man. And, you know, in the first person, you're like, gosh, thank you so much. And the second person, you're like, oh, thank you. And the third person, you're like, that's great. And the fourth and fifth and sixth person, you're like, I just wish you would pray silently and walk along. And it's not that what they were doing was wrong, but there is a point where it almost, and I shared with you that after the whole thing was done, the woman who was the manager of the Christian bookstore, the Lifeway bookstore in the north end of Indianapolis, her name is Roberta, and she is awesome. But she came out and she handed me a bag, and inside the bag, knowing that because my bag was stolen, my Bible was stolen, handed me a brand new Bible. You know, just was the hands and feet of Jesus there. And in that moment, my wife and I discussed it later, that, you know, she was the only person in that whole thing who really had to, it cost her something. It cost her giving me this Bible. I mean, she probably has to figure out in the store how they write that off or how they should call somebody and say, hey, I had to do this. This is what I did because of this situation happened. But she's the one that it cost something. Every other person who came in there, well-meaning, I want to make sure I make that point, well-meaning. I don't say these people are wicked or apathetic or complacent or anything. Well-meaning people just said, well, I'm praying for you. And for my wife and I, we thought, you know what? If that was us, we should say, I'm praying for you, and then ask God, what can we give? How can this cost us? What can we do? Can we take your kids and get something to eat real quick over here? Can we go get you some cheeseburgers? Because you guys are going to be sitting out in front of here, and the kids are probably hungry. Can we get you a blanket because your window's busted out and you got to drive home? Can we ask some questions that will lead us towards serving and loving you in a really tangible, practical way? Or do we just sometimes walk by and go, I'm praying for you?
Yeah, I'm thinking we give lip service, even like, or I'm going to pray for you, but we don't pray for them.
Right.
And it's really, we're just trying to get off the hook.
Yeah, and I think as Christians, if we're really honest with ourselves, there have been times where we've told people, I'm praying for you, and that was kind of code in our mind for, I don't want to talk to you anymore, I'm not sure I can handle any more of this conversation. It's almost kind of the Christian eject button out of a conversation. Well, gosh, brother, I'm just going to be praying for you. And I know that myself, I have to catch myself from using that as kind of a pad go-to answer mm-hmm. for people. I want to say I'm praying for you, but then I also really try to be intentional and say, I'm praying for you. What can I do to help you right now? How can I be an encouragement to you today? Is there a way that I can encourage you? Mm-hmm. And sometimes people won't even answer that piece of the question because they don't really know in that moment when they're struggling. They don't really know what it is they need. But sometimes I think it's just, you know, I'm willing to give of myself. I'm willing to have it cost something. And I think that instead of just saying something, I think that's also having to ask yourself and ask God questions. I mean, really interact with the situation instead of kind of floating through it or going through it. So I think it's important because I think sometimes as Christians, we want to say things or we want to quote Bible verses. And I'm a Bible guy, so I like quoting Bible verses. I quote them a lot. But sometimes I think that we just need to say, hey, you know what? How do I wrap my arms around this person?
Hey, back to that psalm. What was the second half? Because a thought came to my mind, and I want to hear it again.
Sure. He said, I'll be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress.
Yeah, I think in this passage, God is the focus, and I think sometimes maybe we want to become the focus, or we want to have our voice heard, or our advice taught, or our lesson kind of extrapolated or shared. It's because maybe inwardly we want to be recognized or noticed, or like, poor chap, I'm glad I'm in this lot of life.
Yeah, I think that it's constantly a battle for us in terms of, you know, we see our life as kind of, and I think it's really prevalent nowadays, but we see our life as kind of this reality TV show, and we're the stars of the reality TV mm-hmm. show. The Burns are the stars of the reality TV show, and Jesus and God are kind of the sidekicks in the TV show. Jesus and God are kind of a part of it, but they're not the focus of it, because if it was the focus of it, you wouldn't even call it the Burns family. You would be call it following Jesus with the Burns family or something like that. I don't even know how you would market it, but I think that we do. We subtly want to make ourselves the star of it and not God, and therefore God doesn't become the center of it. I think that in this passage, the only way you will be still and be quiet and be those things is if you know that God is in control. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you can't be still unless you know who God is.
Yeah.
There was an interesting story. Now, let me see if I can get it correctly, because I heard it a long, long time ago. But there was a guy who was visiting Bethel Seminary. Bethel Seminary, I guess, is known for their beautiful gardens. And he went out, and there is an overlook that kind of looks out over to the gardens, and there's a plaque. And that plaque has Psalm 46:10 on it. And there's a woman who tends to the gardens. Her job is kind of to oversee them and do all these things. And so he was standing there, and he's just admiring the gardens. He was speaking, I think, at the seminary that night. And she came up, and they began a discussion. And she said, you know, Psalm 46:10, I come here and caring for this and cleaning things up and doing this. One day it struck me that I would pray that backwards. She said, I really felt like God almost told me to do that. And she said, so I prayed it backwards over 7 days. And during that course, every day I dropped a word. And so she said, I began to say, that be still and know that I'm God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that. That what? That I'm God. Be still and know. Know what? I mean, the question elicits itself. Know what? Know that He is God. Be still and. And she said that was the hardest one, because it was like, and what? And always God. Be still, even harder. And then the last one, be. And the only way possible that we can be, you know, that we can be, find kind of the essence of our peace and who we are, is when we are still and we know that there's God, that God is in control of all things, that He is sovereign over all things. And it doesn't make things easier. I mean, one of my verses that I really, really love, I mean, it was a verse that was kind of eye-opening for me a long time ago in a particularly tough season, which is Hebrews 12, halfway through Hebrews 12. Where it says that, you know, it talks about discipline. It says that because your sons and your daughters are the Most High God, that why wouldn't He discipline you? Because a good father disciplines his children. And it says in there, it says, for the time, all discipline feels uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. All discipline is hard, but it's being done to elicit a fruit of righteousness, a fruit of goodness. God sees a better tomorrow for you than He sees today. And He knows there's some things that have to be worked out in order to get you there. In fact, I love the end of that verse where it says, now lift your sagging arms and straighten your bent knees. Where it's this sense of you can't worship, and God wants to bring you to a position where you can worship Him and you can lift up your hands and you can do that. But sometimes first, and in order to do that, we have to get over ourselves. And God wants us to get over ourselves so that we can see Him. I think that at least in my own Christian life, and I'm sure in a number of maybe your lives that are listening right now, the biggest hill to get over to see God is the one that you've created, yourself. And once you get over yourself, I mean, you're not awesome. God is. And I don't say that so that you feel horrible about yourself, but I say that because we need to see how awesome God is, instead of trying to build ourselves up next to that and go, you know, He's really cool, but, you know, I'm cool too. I'm really great, you know. And God's going, well, I mean, because that isn't that, you know, as we're talking about it, isn't that what happens in Job? As Job kind of builds his head of steam in chapter 38, God comes. And finally, God's like, okay, Job, I get it. You got a lot of questions in you. You're really trying to figure out where you fit into this thing. And subtly, Job is trying to say, you know, I'm pretty good. And God goes, out of the whirlwind, who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? The beginning of chapter 38. Dress for action like a man. He goes, you're not even a man. Stand up. He goes, I will question you, and you make it known to me. So God goes, you think you know everything? You think you got it all worked out? Well, I'm going to start asking you some questions, and we'll see if you're omniscient. We'll see if you're omnipotent. We'll see if you're all-knowing and all-present in everything. He goes, where were you when the earth was laid? And Job's like, I was not here. when I laid the foundations of the earth. Were you there, Job? No. Tell me if you have understanding. No. Who determined its measurements? Surely not you. God's going, your arms only stretched this far. You couldn't have measured out the earth.
You would have thought God could have stopped there already.
Right there. And then he keeps going, and he goes, on what were its bases sunk or laid its cornerstone? Now, this is important, too, because when it says on where its bases were sunk or who laid its cornerstone, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. This is a really interesting passage at the end here, because whenever we read the Old Testament, we always have to have an eye towards Jesus. And so when God says who laid its cornerstone, well, Ephesians chapter 2 tells us that Jesus Christ is the cornerstone, and he's the reason that God's house will be straight. And we are built upon that cornerstone. The apostles and prophets and the people are built in, because God's building a family into a house. What's even more fascinating, it says, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. When the morning star sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy, if we go to Revelation and we read in the second chapter of Revelation, we find the only mention of Revelation is the word the Son of God is used to the church at, I believe it is...
Searching.
The church in Thyatira, and that same church in Thyatira, Jesus says at the end in verse 28, and I will give him the morning star. So back in there, when God is saying to Job, who was there at creation? Who measured it? Who laid it? Who did it? By the way, he says in verse 7, who's going to be in charge of redemption? Who's going to lay the cornerstone, and who's going to bring forth the Son of God and the morning star? And Job doesn't even understand what any of that means. We have the vision and understanding of that, because we can go to Ephesians now and read how God illuminated and gave it and breathed out to Paul, and then later breathed out to John these words, which give us an even fuller picture that way back in Job, and Job predates the writing of Genesis. Now, it doesn't predate Genesis, because Genesis is creation, but it predates the writing of Genesis. We find that God is telling Job this early, early person, that I am going to reconcile the world by laying a cornerstone, and when I do, the morning stars will sing for joy because the Son of God has come.
Now, was Satan ever referenced as the morning star somewhere? Or I was just trying to think, because I was thinking maybe this is before Satan's fall, and he was a part of the worship team, you know, one of the heavenly hosts. And
well, you know, there's a lot of conjecture, at that, okay, Mark, and I wouldn't even go there. We do see in the Bible where it says that Satan, Lucifer, was a light bearer, which just means that he was beautiful. Look at Lucifer was beautiful. The problem wasn't Lucifer's beauty. In fact, that has nothing to do with it. The problem was that Lucifer wanted to be like God.
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted to be God. He wanted God's job. Now, this is what's fascinating to me when you think about that, is that Satan is the author of sin, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so all of us have what? Romans 3:23, sinned and fallen short. And so what is constantly our bend? What do we seem to always want to do? Dethrone God. The very thing that caused that great eruption in heaven. You know, we're not sure exactly when it happened. Did it happen in Genesis chapter 1? Where exactly? A lot of people want to argue about that. I don't want to argue about that. The only thing that matters is that it happened.
Yeah.
And it still continues to happen. We're fallen human beings who are beautiful because they're made in the image of God. God created them. God created Satan. God created these things. Beautiful because God created them, and yet desire. There's something that desires to be like God, desires to be God. And the most freeing thing you can ever do in your life, I think, is when you are still and you know that God is God and you are not.
Mm-hmm.
When you realize that he literally, I mean, we sing it as a kid, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole, I don't have the whole world in my hands. But you know what? Don't the idols and the idolatry, doesn't when I put my cell phone in my hand, doesn't it try and make me feel like I've got the whole world in my hands? Isn't there so much about this life that seems to want to give us the illusion that we've got more going on in our lives than we really do? And then we have these moments where all it takes is a guy with who knows what he used. If he used a rock or a little baseball bat or whatever he used, I'm not quite sure. All it takes is for somebody to knock out the window of your car and you realize how absolutely frail you are. how absolutely out of control your life is.
Hey, was it last Wednesday during the morning program when you were being transparent and talking about your iPhone and how it had become a small g god? The very next day it gets stolen.
Everything got stolen. I joked with my wife. I said, you know, I woke up on Friday morning after the whole thing happened, and I went downstairs and I was all ready to go to the church and do what I do. And I had, like, no bag. So I put my computer in a garbage bag to take it with me, and I didn't have a pen. And I got to the church and I sat at my desk, and because they stole my bag, they stole my date book, my hard drive, my phone, which all my contacts and calendar. And I sat at the desk and for like, I don't know, a good 30 minutes, I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I'm like, well, who's coming today?
And your message, your Sunday message was
gone. My Sunday message
was
gone. I mean, I just kind of sat there and go, okay, now what do I need to do? What do I do? It was like they'd stolen the instructions to Friday. I wasn't sure exactly for a little while what I needed to do. And then somebody showed up and they're like, we're here for counseling. And I'm like, yes, sit down, please. I'm on mission again. So,
and how appropriate that verse, be still, I mean, for that period of time. And yet you did see God answer some very unique prayers, though they seemingly were a little disguised, that Christian bookstore manager, and I think there were some other things that fell into place, even the new bag that you have now, how it happened to be there at Best Buy, discounted, the only bag.
Yeah, I tripped over it. I mean, it was on the floor in the center of the thing. And it was returned, and they couldn't sell it, so it was like it was cheap. And I got home, and I sat on the counter, and my wife said, Tasha, she says, they found your bag. I said, no, this is a new one. She goes, it looks just like the old one. I said, it does, doesn't it? I said, that's crazy. She goes, God's crazy.
Yeah.
He's crazy good. The real point of it all is this, is that God is so good. And the Bible says that he takes what is meant for evil, and he uses it for good. And so when we're in those tough seasons, I think the hardest thing is to not become a type of evil ourselves by becoming either self-righteous or angry or indignant or all those things, but instead to put on a set of glasses which allows us to see how God is working in the midst of this. Because it says in Corinthians that he's the God of comfort in the midst of all afflictions. He brings comfort. He's the God of all comfort. And therefore, when, you know, his comfort is not just words, though he gives us words through his word. His comfort is not just taking care of insurance or taking. His comfort is wrapping his arms around you in such a way that he says to the Holy Spirit, let's put a bag right there, because that'll really. I mean, it's almost like you can picture the manna falling, where he's like, and let's do this, and let's use that woman in the store to give him that bite. Let's do that. I mean, and so he takes all these things that are meant for evil, and he uses them for good. Mm-hmm. And so today, just put on those glasses. Maybe it's a tough season for you. And begin to look at what God is doing, because he hasn't left you. He hasn't forsaken you. He is right here. And sometimes we have to be still. We have to shut up. And we have to just look to see what he's doing, because he's there. Know that God is there.
And I like part of the lesson that you can draw from some of your illustrations. Be proactive. So maybe today's message was that if you see someone in similar circumstances, think of tangible ways, maybe buying them a meal, bringing them something, offer to drive or watch their kids, or there's a multitude of things that you can do tangibly. Though you can certainly offer your prayers and words of advice or counsel or help, take some measures where it's going to actually cost you something. Maybe it'll cost you your time or your energy or whatever it is. Sense and seek after God, and he'll make it clear as you're still with him. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffo with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.